over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces, and the French capital, Paris. Commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring, as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia. And this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced three rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
As-salamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
أسعد حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا رغي.
What non-Muslims say about Ali, the first successor of Prophet Muhammad. Robert Duray Osborne, 1835 to 1889, Major of the Bengal Staff Corps, says the following about Imam Ali in his book Islam Under the Arabs, page 120. With him perished the truest hearted and best Muslim of whom Muhammadan history had preserved the remembrance.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhis salam. So, dear friends, we are talking about the beautiful persona of Imam Ali, alayhis salam, this persona which has been able to transcend both time, place, and era. And this persona, of course, who was sourced and connected to the Almighty Allah as he was the first divinely appointed Imam. And of course, this persona, which was the manifestation and the embodiment of the true teachings of the pure Muhammadan Islam, the teachings of the Quran, and the teachings of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Now, one of the things that we see in the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is this idea of living a simple lifestyle. Now, this is something in today's day and age which is rarely seen. Most of the people are so engulfed in consumerism and materialism, and they have become this integral part of this machinery of capitalism and this incessant and continuous idea of buying as much as we can, and in many cases, I mean, not even living within our means. A lot of people have to take out credit, and that credit incurs an interest upon it, and then you become debt slaves. Now, what's interesting is all of this kind of all of these problems, such as debt slavery, or this incessant addiction to be continuously buying, or to become a cog in this wicked machinery of capitalism. All of these are sourced in what? They are sourced in this idea that we do not want to live a simple lifestyle. We want to live as luxurious as possible, because as they say in the capitalistic, materialistic-driven societies, you only have one life to live, so live to the fullest. Whereas in the Islamic model and in the Islamic teachings, the worldly life is just a means. And the worldly life is not the only life. The actual life and the real life, as the Holy Quran tells us, is the hereafter. It is the akhirah.
It is the time after we die where eternity begins but never ends. And precisely we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, during his own life, lived an incredibly simple lifestyle. Now, you might say, well, Imam Ali lived a simple lifestyle when he wasn't the caliph. But of course, when he gained power and position and a potentiality of gaining wealth, then he must have changed. Rather, we see that when Imam Ali alayhi salam became the caliph of the Muslims, it is the opposite. His simple lifestyle became much more severe, to the point where he told one of his companions that you cannot do what I am doing because it is so difficult to live that severity of a simple lifestyle that Imam Ali alayhi salam was living, eating an incredibly dry bread made of barley. So some of us might think, well, what does that mean? Well, not only was it dry, if it's dry, it's very hard to chew. And two, barley bread is not as sweet naturally as white bread, for example, or wheat bread is. Barley bread is a little bit bitter, it's a little bit sour. And so this is the lifestyle that Imam Ali alayhi salam lived. Now, this doesn't mean that we stop eating our regular food or we stop, you know, wearing clothes that are appropriate for our position and our status. Of course, within a average and mediocre means, you know. But it does mean that we need to think twice about what is extravagant in our life, what is a luxury in our life, and what is a need in our life. And we must make sure not to confuse a need with a luxury and a luxury with a need, and we really need to reflect and think about how we can live a simple lifestyle. And if we follow this very relatively simple prescription of the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is to lead and live a simple, humble, yet satisfied and contented life, I can guarantee you that we will be able to solve many, many of the problems that come about because of a materialistic, capitalistic, and consumeristic-driven society which many of us are faced with in the present day. A beautiful, profound, thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعا وعلى القاصدين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits his supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help, procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Why should we be proud? You will notice human nature is to worship heroes. Hero worship is common. People go to watch movies because they love to watch heroes. Comic book shops sell all those fantasy stories because we love to worship heroes. Hero worship is a natural phenomenon. But all of that is fantasy. It's not real. Such people don't exist. Superman doesn't exist. Spider-Man doesn't exist. They don't exist. And even if you're talking about great kings that came, they were false in many ways in their character. They were not good role models. But Imam Ali alayhi wasalam, the one who dislodges such personalities, yet he was so humble. So humble, so down to earth that you and I need to follow. I'll give you a simple example. One example you find is, many a times you and I notice when we give charity with strings attached. And when we give it, we make people feel bad. You know, when you do Allah's work, it's very hard to go to people and say, give a few dollars for Allah's work. They feel they're doing a big thing for Allah. And in their minds, Surah Yasin mentions that, I'll talk about it some other time. In their minds they're saying, why does God want me to contribute when He's so rich He can contribute Himself? Look at this notion. So we have strings attached when we give charity and we make people feel bad.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Nothing can halt Iran's progress. In the field of economy, Iran is expanding its ties from neighboring countries to faraway Venezuela. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote in this regard, "The Islamic Republic's vigorous efforts to disentangle its economic growth from the hamstrung JCPOA and its illegally frozen multi-billion dollar assets by the ever-increasing sanctions of a frustrated U.S. regime is paying dividends as its rapidly expanding trade ties bring in far greater revenues. The countries of the region, aware of the ground realities in Iran, where stability prevails nationwide, providing safe and secure investment opportunities, along with the shortest transit routes for international trade, have brushed aside the false narratives of the malevolent Western regimes of a turmoil that tried to create but failed miserably, thanks to the multi-million-strong masses' snubbing of the thugs, terrorists, and traitors. For instance, Turkey, whose trade with Iran for the first three quarters of 2022 was worth $4.8 billion, a 24% annual growth, according to Turkish Statistical Institute, continues to ignore U.S. pressures. And last month, it decided to increase its natural gas imports from the Islamic Republic of Iran. Pakistan, for its part, imported almost $1 billion of Iranian goods over the past 7 months. While India, which has invested in the Chabahar port for facilitating bilateral trade as well as to and fro transit of goods with Russia and the Central Asian republics, has sensed the futility of U.S. sanctions and announced its intention to resume crude oil imports from the Islamic Republic. Iran-India trade increased by 56% over the past 8 months and currently stands around $1.8 billion. If Iran has inked a $40 billion agreement with Russia and signed another multi-billion dollar accord with China, the landlocked Central Asian states are making a beeline to Tehran for trade exchanges, for help in setting up modern industries, and for the surest transit routes to the international markets. The same tendency towards Iran prevails in the Southern Caucasus, where Armenia, Georgia, and even the Republic of Azerbaijan were the overwhelming majority of people. Despite the erratic nature of the ruling despotic regime, we use the Islamic Republic as the source of inspiration. Across the Persian Gulf, Qatar, the UAE, Kuwait, and Oman, whose trade with Iran increased by 70% in the first 7 months of the current year, in spite of their close ties with the U.S., are undeterred in expanding commercial relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is an open secret that it is thriving commercial and political relations with the Islamic Republic in almost all fields that have saved from American hegemony, not just Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, but also faraway Venezuela. where a wide variety of Iranian products have nullified the U.S. attempts to choke the people of that country to death and deprivation. Now comes the news. To the horror of the U.S., the malicious West European regimes and their mercenaries daydreaming of disturbing the peace and prosperity of the Iranian people, of the auspicious opening the Islamic Republic has made in the hitherto strained relations with Jordan by holding a 10-day trade exhibition that was enthusiastically welcomed by the Jordanian people. Following last month's meeting in New York on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly between Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian and Jordan's Minister of Foreign and Expatriate Affairs, Ayman Safadi, relations have begun to thaw and indicate bright prospects of growth. The Iranian trade exhibition held in the Al Hossein Youth City suburb of the capital Amman saw 38 Iranian companies displaying their products ranging from the famed handmade Persian carpets to foodstuffs and heavy industrial machinery to home appliances and medicines, as well as exquisitely carved wooden furniture. Meanwhile, Tehran Times reported in a phone conversation with Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin late on Saturday, November 12th, President Sayed Ebrahim Raisi called for expansion of infrastructure ties, including strengthening and developing transportation lines in the Eurasian region in line with efforts to boost commercial and economic relations in the region. The Iranian president welcomed Russia's willingness to strengthen economic cooperation with Iran and expanding infrastructure ties, including developing transportation lines in the Eurasian region. He said this will help trade and economic cooperation in the region. In the phone conversation that was initiated by Putin, the Iranian president said increasing diplomatic and economic exchanges between the two countries are important in improving relations. For his part, Putin pointed the special geographical location of Iran and said the North-South corridor is effective in reducing the time and cost of transportation. This transit route will become an attractive route for the world in terms of economy and trade. Putin also pointed to the visit of a 100-person Russian business delegation to Tehran as the third largest Russian economic delegation to Iran and noted that Iran and Russia have many capacities to consolidate ties. The Russian leader also pointed to the October 26th terrorist incident in Shiraz and once again expressed his sympathy with the Iranian government and people and condemned terrorism in any form. The Kremlin also issued a statement announcing that Putin had a phone conversation with his Iranian counterpart. Putin and the Iranian president emphasized the strengthening cooperation in political and economic spheres, including transportation.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the peak of desires and extreme limit of aspirations. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to this show, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. Now, in today's program, we're talking about the peak of desires in a human being and extreme limit of aspirations. A man's innate desires extend to infinity. There is no limit or boundary to any of these desires. They do not require restriction or even halt at a particular level. On the contrary, they all lead man to the ultimate point and making him having boundless desires. Now, having boundless desires is verily one of the characteristics of man or of a human being. Temporary and limited access does not content man. Even the non-religious philosophers do not deny man's innate desires. Rather, this is regarded as one of the most important principal differences of man and animals. Russell has noted as below, one of the most important principal differences of man and animals is that human desires, as opposed to those of animals, are boundless and cannot be fully materialized. There's no way they can be, you know, fixed. There's no way they can be fully materialized. Although these wishes are variegated, they are all finally brought together, and their ultimate satisfaction is summed up in one thing: relationship with the infinite source of knowledge, power, beauty, and perfection. It is the future of the states of being that the more severe and the more powerful and perfect they become, the more they incline towards unity and extension.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. We're talking about the peak of desires and the extreme limit of aspirations in a man. Human faculties, which are dispersed when belonging to the body, are united when attached to the soul. While possessed of unity and extension, the soul embraces all human powers. In like manner, the extreme point of each of the innate desires, which extends to infinity and which is then united with other desires, is in fact one ultimate desire perceived from various viewpoints and angles. And that is dependence on a perfect infinite being. That is to say, proximity to the Almighty Allah in such a state makes a man realize his complete relationship with the Creator. He sees himself dependent on and linked to Him, or rather, he sees himself as the incarnation of dependence on and relationship with Him. Before His presence, man observes no independence for himself. In this state, he sees all objects dependent on the Holy Divine Being and acquires speculative knowledge of the realities of existence on the basis of his own existential involvement. He reaps benefit from rays of divine grandeur and beauty. The man's innate desire to recognize the realities of existence is materialized. Now, in this state, man finds a way to the source of infinite power. By being related to this source, man obtains the power to perform whatever he wills and wishes.
In the limelight.
Widespread dissatisfaction of employees working for the British National Health Service, NHS, including a significant part of doctors and nurses who are going to resign in protest at the current situation, has put this complex more than ever in danger of bankruptcy. The British Medical Association, which has recently conducted studies on the healthcare system, has warned about the collapse of the NHS. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more. Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer has admitted the National Health Service is on the brink of collapse, but warned the struggling service will also need to play its part in helping fix Britain's broken economy. Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt said there were massive pressures in the NHS, with doctors, nurses on the front line, frankly, under unbearable pressure. However, Jeremy Hunt claimed the service received a lot of money and we need to do everything we can to find efficiencies. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak vowed to prioritise the National Health Service in his first speech as Prime Minister, but The Times reported that the Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, did not want to ask for money for the service in the autumn statement. Sources close to Steve Barclay have denied this, but did not reject claims he wanted to find cuts. The General Secretary of the Unison Trade Union, Christina McKenna, has accused the Tories of deliberately running down the NHS in an effort to allow an organisation to take over running it. Christina McKenna said, "Difficult things will happen if they do not make the right choices, and one of those is that the National Health Service is almost ready to collapse." She added, "Excuse me for sounding like a conspiracy theorist, but I have heard so many people say it now. Is this partly a deliberate attempt by the government to run down the National Health Service in order to bring in some kind of organisation to run it? I hope that's not what they're doing. What they aren't doing is making the right choices of investing in our public services." It comes as nurses plan to strike for the first time, taking action before Christmas. New figures show 7.1 million people in England were waiting for hospital treatment at the end of September, the highest since records began in August of 2007. When asked about nurses' pay demands, Jeremy Hunt said, "I think we have to recognise a difficult truth, that if we gave everyone inflation-proof pay rises, inflation would stay. We wouldn't bring down inflation, and that's why I'm not pretending there aren't some difficult decisions." The Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, said pay review bodies should work with unions to determine fair but affordable pay rises for nurses. The British newspaper The Daily Mirror has more on the same story. Britain's Chancellor Jeremy Hunt on Sunday, 13th of November, warned we're all going to be paying a bit more tax as he unveils his autumn statement budget. Reports suggest Jeremy Hunt will cut the £150,000 threshold for 45 pence tax to £125,000 to generate £1.3 billion a year, and cut energy bill support from £60 billion in the current 6 months to just £20 billion in the 6 months afterwards. But healthcare leaders have demanded extra funds for the National Health Service amid record waiting times. Jeremy Hunt told Sky News presenter Sophie Ridge that, "Frankly, this doesn't look like a health service that can find efficiency savings. This looks like a health service that is on the brink of collapse." The top Tory, a former health secretary and former chairman of the Commons Health Select Committee, replied, "There are massive pressures in the NHS." He said, "Obviously, it's something I know very well from previous jobs I've done, and I think that doctors, nurses on the front line are frankly under unbearable pressure, so I do recognise the picture that you say." NHS England figures showed a record 43,792 people waited longer than 12 hours in October, from a decision to admit to actually being admitted to a ward. These trolley waits were up a staggering 34% from 32,776 in September, the highest since records began in 2010. Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said public services are already on their knees. 7 million people are waiting for a National Health Service operation or support. It came as Chancellor Jeremy Hunt admitted he will be a Scrooge in this autumn statement on Thursday with no rabbits out of the hat. He refused to deny it would mark a return to austerity, replying, "There will be difficult decisions and we will be asking everyone for sacrifices." Jeremy Hunt warned he won't be offering motherhood and apple pie or cakeism, an accusation he laid at Boris Johnson's door. The Chancellor is eyeing up £33 billion a year of spending cuts and £21 billion a year of tax rises by 2027, in a bid to balance the books. Echoing George Osborne's austerity rhetoric, he tried to claim the nation's finances were like a family budget, despite the £2.4 trillion national debt. Jeremy Hunt told the BBC, "We're going to see everyone paying more tax. We're going to see spending cuts." Sky News has also covered the same story. The Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, has said it's a badge of shame that nurses are staging their first ever nationwide strike in England, but also refused to commit to a 17% pay rise. Rachel Reeves said, "I'm not going to pluck numbers out of the air, and it's up to the pay review bodies to work with the unions, despite the fact that the pay review bodies have already reported back and it's up to the government." Rachel Reeves added, "I don't believe that austerity 2.0 after the austerity that we've gone through for the last 12 years is the right approach." She said she would close tax loops on big global multinationals to bring in an extra £7 billion a year. She also repeated the Labour Party's pledge to levy a 45% capital gains tax on private equity fund managers instead of the current 28%. British nurses have voted for the first time to go on industrial action before Christmas, as increase in the inflation rate has plunged many Britons into dire economic straits. Union officials say nurses in large swathes of the country working in England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland voted for industrial action after strike ballots were recommended to 300,000 union members and members of the Royal College of Nursing. The Royal College of Nursing is due to unveil the final results of its ballot in the next few days as counting continues. The union said its members have faced a decade of real terms pay cuts, and it is campaigning for a pay rise of 5% above the rate of inflation, which currently stands at a record high of 10%. An analysis by the Nuffield Trust published earlier this year reported 1 in 9 nurses had quit the British National Health Service, NHS, by June of 2022, marking more than 46,000 nursing, midwifery and health visitor vacancies in the NHS in England alone.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba vujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith and Selective Duty, Monday the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. There is a well-known tradition from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, which appears at the beginning of the chapter on enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, Al-Amr bil-Ma'roof wa-Nahi anil-Munkar, in the book Al-Kafi, one of our most important works of hadith. There is also Al-Wafi by Fayl Kashani, which combines traditions from our major collections of hadith, and I believe the aforementioned tradition also appears at the beginning of its chapter on this topic. This tradition says that, as we have mentioned, there are people who pray and fast so long as it's easy and doesn't cost them anything, but who avoid the duty of enjoining good and forbidding evil because it is difficult and liable to cause them hardship or bring them harm. The Imam does not say these people are not believers or that they do not have faith. He does not say they are sinners or hypocrites. However, the Quran is clear about this. Those who are after their own interests and do not really want the religion in its totality, they are not believers.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These are the people who, when they are in the right on an issue, go to the Prophet to seek his judgment. But when they are in the wrong, and they know that the Prophet will rule against them in his judgment, and they know that the Prophet will rule against them in his judgment, they do not go to him. The Quran asks, are they afraid? Are they in doubt? Have they some misgivings about the truth of this religion? Or do they have doubts or fear that Allah and his Apostle will be unjust to them? The Quran, Surah 24, verse 50. This is close to disbelief. Do they fear that Allah and His Messenger would mistreat them? In all issues, in all disputes, in all the ups and downs of daily life, a believing person is moral. They are not only moral when it suits them to be. As everyone knows, when Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan needed to, he brought pages of the Quran and had them raised on spears. When it suited him, he would talk about the Quran, prayer, and the religion. When he wanted to win over someone who was on Ali's side, he would even mention the virtues of the Commander of the Faithful. He would even shed crocodile tears as he recited these. You have heard this story countless times. Muawiyah was sitting, Abdullah ibn Abbas was sitting, others were sitting also. He asked someone, "Oh, so and so, what do you know of Ali's merits?" They would ask, Do you promise me safety? He says, yes, you're safe. Then he began to praise Ali, and as he did, Muawiyah would begin to shed tears. When he needed to, he would speak of his love for Ali. When he needed to, he would portray himself as a devoted servant of Allah. When he was forced to, in order to govern the masses of Muslims, he would respect their feelings. He would not want to offend their sentiments. He would speak of things that the people cherish, that is the Quran and Islam.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Iran insists that recent riots in the country were orchestrated by outside adversaries such as the United States. But EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels on Monday took a different view. They have agreed on new sanctions against Iran, claiming the rioters are seeking freedom.
To support them, today the Council adopted another 31 listing under the Iran human rights regime.
The channel you are watching now, Press TV, has also been added to the EU sanctions list. Press TV management has vehemently rejected claims by the EU that the channel broadcast forced confessions from detainees during recent riots in Iran. EU officials have been asked to provide evidence to back up the claims, but it's already clear that will not be forthcoming, simply because it never happened. This latest set of sanctions follows similar measures against Iran taken by the EU in October.
Iran is geographically a very strong position because they can decide, okay, if the European Union is going to make life harder in terms of sanctions, we can close or threaten to close the Strait of Hormuz. That means that Qatar, which is the principal supplier, I think about 70% of gas is coming from Qatar these days, will be stranded.
One EU minister says the new sanctions should not be allowed to derail talks around the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
I hope that this can be kept separated because the JCPOA negotiations, of course, it has a long history already, and I would say it's this close that we could get an agreement on JCPOA.
During a debate on human rights in the European Parliament a few days ago, the EU was accused of displaying double standards.
Europe has invaded and butchered millions, plundered and committed genocide, overthrown and murdered revolutionaries, backed brutal dictators, imposed murderous sanctions.
Amid growing economic turmoil in the EU, many experts claim sanctions against Russia have backfired. In other words, sanctions don't work. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A high-ranking Venezuelan delegation is in Tehran to take part in a joint economic meeting with the Islamic Republic. The purpose of the commission is to deepen cooperation in strategic areas as part of a 20-year agreement signed between the two countries.
This is the 9th Joint Economic Commission, and as you know, representatives from both sides have identified potential areas of cooperation in different fields, including transportation, industries, agriculture, energy, science, and technology. We will be trying to find ways to facilitate trade between the two countries to boost bilateral relations in order to avert the consequences of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and Venezuela are two independent states that share common views about many regional and international issues, such as seeking independence, the right to self-determination, and a multipolar world order.
Nosotros lo que estamos mostrando es la verdadera...
We care about the well-being of our nations. Our values are different from imperialistic countries. Now that our people and our governments are united, we can avert the U.S. sanctions and allow out countries to prosper through bilateral cooperation and a strong political and economic ties.
Part of our scientific cooperation and training includes ways to advance new trends in molecular biology, biotechnology, and proteomics for cancer treatment.
In Venezuela, we have been testing regenerative agriculture in order to avoid desertification. We have achieved excellent results, and now we are ready to share our experiences with Iran.
Iran and Venezuela signed a 20-year cooperation roadmap during a state visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022, as the two oil-rich countries sanctioned by the U.S. pledged to boost bilateral ties.
The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela will be going on for another 3 days. It is expected to pave the way for implementing the cooperation agreements signed between the two countries in different fields. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Last winter was devastating for many Afghans, especially internally displaced families. Some lost their loved ones, while some were forced to sell their children and body organs to make ends meet. Yet this year, the UN Refugee Agency warns that the coming winter will even be more deadly and challenging for displaced people. According to the UN body, 79% of Afghans do not have adequate access to heating, and 79% households live in shelters that require repair. We are visiting a refugee camp in Kabul, where the people are struggling amid the looming cold season.
People here are facing many challenges. Neither the previous government nor the Islamic Emirate has taken any steps to address them. I know families here who are on the brink of starvation. They can't afford basic needs and struggle to survive. I wonder why the aid organizations are not reaching out to these families.
A woman who fled her house in Helmand during the U.S. war now lives in a cold shack, facing dire conditions. She says she uses plastic and paper wastes for cooking.
Look, I have no clothes, carpet, food.